Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It's not to be avoided. You got to check the tape. You got to watch the tape. You got to review the tape. And then you got to discuss the tape here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Lagerman here with you. We will put to bed the Jaguars' latest defeat coming at the hands of the Minnesota Vikings this past weekend. A look ahead to the Houston Texans this week. Jeff, always a good place to start with the quarterback position. Get your thoughts on Blake Bortles. No turnovers for Blake. That was good. Mm-hmm. Some nice passes there. Very nice touchdown pass to Brian Walters. Overall, though, how would you grade the performance?
Okay. I mean, it would ended up being like almost a 92 rating. He had no turnovers. That's positive. You know, but was it a performance that made him win? No. You know, I mean, that's, you know, here's the thing I think where we're at with Blake Bortles is that we think, okay, doesn't turn the ball over. He's got a touchdown pass. Okay, that's a good performance. Well, is it really?
Right.
No.
We can't grade him against his own past performances.
No.
He has to be graded against his peers.
It was a solid performance, but it wasn't a winning performance. And at some point, you got to start looking at it. And I'm looking at it this way now: is that is he playing well enough to make those around him better, or is he playing well enough just to be okay? And he's got to take the next step. Some of the balls that, he missed early on, could have kept some drives alive. I thought his wide receivers really helped him out. I thought Marquise Lee.
I think he was right. I was going to say the same thing. He's making Blake better. He's making everybody better if you're going to make catches like that.
Kind of like last year we saw Allen Robinson.
Sure.
Make him better in a lot of situations. Marquise is being the one that's doing that now. So, but just not good enough. If you're going to win, you got to get some better output out of that position. But, the one thing that really just, the week before, I remember going in the Denver Broncos game, and the Denver Broncos had played Kansas City the week before in a much anticipated game. It was a fantastic game to watch in which Von Miller and Justin Houston had unbelievable games. And, of course, Denver had some special teams problems in that game, and Joe DeCamillis, the special teams coordinator, came out after that game and he said, "Hey, worst game I've ever been associated with." Tyreek Hill had a big return on them, and they had some other situation where special teams failed. And then, you look at this game for the Jaguars special teams wise. If Joe DeCamillis would have been a part of this game, he would have said, "This now has surpassed the one that we had against Kansas City."
Well, I'm sure you were there. You saw the game. You broadcast the game. But to see Hayes Carline put it into chronological order, every special teams miscue that took place on Monday morning was just, it made you sick.
Yeah, I had seven of them. I had seven of them. You probably could have had more than that. You had a 53-yard return by Patterson. That was in the first half. And then after you took the lead, that's when the special teams issues really popped up. You had a delay game on the kickoff, and I've never personally witnessed that.
Two of them in the league last year, in the entire league. Happened twice.
Deflected punt doesn't go down as a block punt because it crossed the line of scrimmage. You had a penalty for roughing the punter. You had an illegal touching by Aurelius Ben. And I get that he thinks that it was touched and it's a live ball. But you got two other guys standing around in that situation. You've got to say, look, it's live. Get somebody else to touch it, knowing that you stepped out of bounds. And then the one that was kind of missed, a lot of people, I don't know if anybody talked about it, was after that illegal touching, they obviously opted to have the Jaguars punt it again. And then Brad Nortman does what is kind of a punt designed to pin them down inside the 20, which is the end-over-end punt. And it traveled maybe 34, 35 yards in the air. And so, in that situation, you're looking for a kick, punt, a booming punt, and they don't get it. And then after that, you obviously had the blocked field goal, that happens on 60-plus yarders.
At that point, right, on a 61-yarder, I don't think you're worrying too much about it.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I got 7 right there, and there was probably some other ones in there. The blocked punt was on Dan Scuda. He's trying to help out Carson Tinker because, the snapper's got his head down and you'd like to get a piece of the guy that's going to be getting into his gap and then kind of shuffle back to your guy. And I know that he was going into the game questionable with an elbow, and it was his right elbow. He's the right guard on the punt protection unit, so that's the arm that he has to use to slow down 27. I believe it was 27 or 37, whoever it was that blocked the punt. And he doesn't get enough of him, and he comes around and he doesn't block punt, but he deflects the punt, and they don't get anything out of it. But, I mean, field position right now for this football team has not been good. You know, and I've always believed that special teams is an aspect that it's, you know, it's scheme, it's effort, and it's a lot of desire. And I believe that anybody has the ability to be good on special teams, particularly coverage units. Return games, I mean, you got to have a guy that's got some ability to return the football. But that was disappointing from the Jaguars' standpoint of special teams because it just wasn't even close to being good enough.
And once again, you know, just in the whole tapestry of finding creative different ways to lose every week, seemingly, you know, a big disappointment from the special teams contributing to this one. 8 in a row for the Jaguars. We'll get into every aspect of Jaguar football we care to this morning, and you're welcome to join us at 641-1010. As always, when we have Jeff, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question, just ask you to send your Jaguar-related questions to the professor, Jeff Loggeman, today. You can do that on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at Logs56, L-O-G-S, 56, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. 641-1010 on the phone lines and also the text line driven by Duval Ford. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Loggeman on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Phone lines open to you when we return in a moment. We'll get into Allen Robinson and Blake Bortles, their connection, despite the meeting last week, not a productive one against the Minnesota Vikings. That and more coming your way on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Catch Jaguars linebacker Telvin Smith Tuesdays on 1010XL.
We hit, we win.
The Telvin Smith Show.
You do it as tough as it is possible.
Tuesdays at 4:40 p.m. Brought to you by Carlson Enterprises. Jeff Loggeman lays down the law. Jeff Loggeman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Loggeman.
All right, it's not a check the tape Tuesday. We'll call it a watch the tape Wednesday today. Loggy in a day later than he usually is on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Loggeman here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. 641-1010 is the phone number if you'd like to get on board. We mentioned Allen Robinson going to the break. Have had several questions already submitted on him today. One asked, you know, are there specific areas you think he's regressed in this year? Let's start with this, though. Coming out of, you know, we understand the fact that Blake and Allen Robinson didn't speak for the first time last week, right? They've been talking all along, but they did have a meeting that included Nathaniel Hackett with just the three of them to try to get them on the same page. When it went down, he did draw a couple penalties, but outside of that, three targets, one catch for 17 yards. Still more work to do? Or was it something that Minnesota was doing to him defensively? Is he not getting separation? Why didn't we see a little bit better impact, I guess, out of Allen Robinson?
Well, specifically in that game, they had Xavier Rhodes following A-Rob, and he's an excellent player. He's probably one of the best little-known cornerbacks in the league, so tough matchup. And then they're going to play some safety over the top. And I think that's probably the hardest thing that Allen Robinson has had to adjust to this year is that, you know, look, last year you were able to play in anonymity. You know, when I say that, and that, you know, teams weren't scheming to stop you. And so now it's not as if they're scheming every play to stop Allen Robinson, but he is seeing a lot more attention, safety stuff over the top, split safety, whatever you want to call it. And look, you know, the big-time wide receivers in the league or the better wide receivers in the league are going to get that. And they adjust, and there's ways that they can find to get them the ball, whether it be schematically, whether it be individually, Allen Robinson beating press jam, because that's probably the biggest change that he's seen is that when you have split safety or safety over the top, they're putting a cornerback up in your face knowing that there's help deep, so they can put the corner up in your face and you got to beat the jam. And I think that that's something that Allen has to get better at.
So the idea would be improve, beat the jam, and try to find him in the seam between the corner and the safety more? Is that kind of the thought if you want to get him the ball?
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, is, you know, if you want to get him the ball there's two ways to think of that. Is if he's our guy, move him around to where they can't do that stuff. The other option is that if they're going to continue to give him all that attention, it opens up opportunities for guys elsewhere. And, you know, a lot of people want to look at it and say, well, it's A-Rob. Well, look, partly A-Rob. It's partly the quarterback is not taking a step up and his accuracy is not great. So it's a little bit of everything. And to say that he's regressed, look, 80 balls for 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns, that just doesn't happen very often in the National Football League. And you can't expect Allen Robinson to put up those kind of numbers year in and year out. It just doesn't happen. I don't know how many times it's happened in the league, but it's not very
much. How
many
was it, Tony, for the 14 and 1,400?
I want to say 19. 19 seasons that league in history,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's very rare. You know, so I think part of you know, and I don't know this because I don't live in Allen Robinson's head, but you could see the body language, a little frustration set in. And the communication between, you know, the offensive coordinator and his quarterback last week, I think that's kind of a little bit overblown. And that, look, you know, those guys talk all the time. I think it was just talked about, you know, and which made it gather more attention. I mean, those type of things happen throughout the season, and it's not something that's just, you know, new. But you can see that there's some frustration. The game before against the Denver Broncos, there was a ball that was thrown a little low on the Jaguars' boundary on that sideline. And A-Rob was kind of after the play, was putting his hands up in the air, like, you know, put it high so I got an opportunity to make a move. And look, that's not the kind of body language that you want to see from the seats. You know what I mean? Because it's showing frustration and it's showing that you're a displeasure. And you can't have that happen.
All right, 641-1010. If you want to weigh in, whether it's Allen Robinson or any other aspect of Jaguar football, you're welcome to do that. Let's go to Washington, D.C. to start off this morning and welcome Josh to the program. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning. I got a question for Jeff, and that's can you evaluate Brandon Linder's move from guard to center? Seems that last year everybody was falling over themselves to praise how well he was doing, and then this year we shoehorned him into the center position, and I'm just not hearing that praise. So I'm just wondering, you know, how Jeff thinks he's performing, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, right. Great question, and I've been singing his praises all year. I mean, he is a fantastic football player. I was one of the guys that was kind of hesitant, you know, and I don't want to say hesitant. I was cautiously optimistic about his move to center because – look, I mean, you're asking a guy to do something that, you know, he's done in his past, but it's not like he's done on a regular basis. Brandon Linder is the Jaguars' best offensive lineman. If he were playing on a good football team with a good offensive line, he would be a Pro Bowl caliber guy. If he's playing with the Dallas Cowboys, he's a perennial Pro Bowler. He's that good. And he makes the Jaguars' offensive line better. The level of communication that he's been able to display and coming out of a role that, you know, a guard doesn't do a lot of communication. They're pretty much just passing on the information because the center and the quarterback are making the majority of those calls. I think he's had a tremendous year. I think it's been a pleasant surprise of how well he's done at center. And I think that you always take your best interior player and have him at center. And I've always believed that. And the reason I say that is the center can potentially block. First of all, he's making all the calls. He's getting everybody lined up. And number two, is that he blocks somebody that can make the play every time. As a tackle, if it's a run wide left, a right tackle is not going to make a key block. A center can make a key block on every single play. So you always put your best player at center, and it was wise to do that. And I give him credit and give him credit for having the courage to do that because he was so good at guard, because it's kind of a little bit of a leap of faith, and it has worked out very well.
You've got we assume they're going to pick up Beecham's extension, right, the four-year –
Yes, and but I want to say this about Kelvin Beecham. Very proud of the fact that he's been able to play the amount of snaps, been on the field, you know, because availability is way better than ability. And he's been out there, and he's struggling a little bit right now. He struggled with Griffin, the power stuff. You can tell that Kelvin Beecham is still fighting through the knee and getting power. Yes, you're going to pick his option up, but you also want to pick that option up with the understanding that where he was at this year is not good enough for him next year with the option being picked up. Or, for that matter, it doesn't matter what the pay level is, his abilities are higher than what he's shown. Kelvin Beecham is a really good football player, And I can't wait to see him play the game healthy and see the player that we saw with Pittsburgh. We're seeing glimpses of it. We're seeing his athleticism. We're seeing his balance. But we're not seeing the power out of him
right.
that he has.
He was playing well before it was a year removed from the injury. So,
Which is a credit to him.
That's what I'm saying. So you got Beecham, you got Linder, who you feel really good about. I think left guard is a question mark right now.
I've said this before that, AJ can. I like AJ can. I don't think he took a step up this year. And he played, 51 games at South Carolina at left guard. And I think next year you put him at left, and because that's the position that he's played almost his entire life, and see if he can do better. See if he has a higher ceiling at left guard than what he's shown at right guard.
And then how do you feel about Parnell? One of the questions we got on Twitter was, do the Jags need to, whether it's a draft, free agency, at least bring in competition, serious competition,
sure.
for that spot?
Yeah, bring in competition, Jeremy Parnell's done a pretty good job. I mean, he's been solid. You can't have, studs across the line. I mean, even if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, Tyron Smith, the left tackle, is a great player. Doug Free at the right tackle position when Parnell was playing with the Dallas Cowboys and for the injured Doug Free, I could have made the argument that Parnell was playing better than Doug Free. I thought he was. So it's not like you have to have five studs across the line. What you'd like to have is – three or four really good football players, and then the ability to help one. And so if you have Parnell at right tackle and you need to occasionally give him help when he's facing a Von Miller type of player, so be it. You can live with that.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines here. Thanks for that look at the offensive line. Sebastian in St. Johns County, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I've got a quick question regarding Gus Bradley and the Jaguars in general. And watching the Jaguars the last 4 years, especially this year, the one thing that kind of stands out and is consistent is the lack of discipline. And it seems like every game you can count on the Jaguars making mental errors and having situations like on the special teams where it just seem like, I don't know if it's only mental errors or if they're also underprepared. But I guess my question to you, Jeff, is it seems pretty obvious that Gus Bradley, unfortunately he seems to be a great guy but doesn't seem to be the right fit here in Jacksonville. It seems like he's going to be gone after the year. My question is, why is the owner waiting for the end of the season if, there's nothing changing, everything's the same every week, they lose the same way every week, and you have teams like the Rams going ahead and getting rid of Jeff Fisher and moving on and getting a plan for the future? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, guys.
Well, let me say this, that, look, I think Gus is a great, great guy, great man. I think he is a good football coach. But when you got two wins and the owner's expecting, a competitive football team and a year in which the division, 500 puts you in the hunt, change is coming. I mean, there's no doubt. And what that change is, I don't know. I mean, that's up to Shad Khan. And to say that the Rams are doing it the right way, I think is being misunderstood. Because look, the Rams aren't necessarily doing the right way just because they fired Jeff Fisher. I mean, what is that doing to make them a better football team?
There's no one they can go interview now, right? It's not like they're getting a head start because you're likely drawing your next coach from the pool of guys who are out
there. It makes the fans feel better.
But you know why, though, Jeff? Because they're losing 48-0 this week. And then Todd Gurley comes out and says we're running the middle school offense. And he basically doesn't even insinuate. He says guys on his team aren't trying. They're just going through the motions to close out the season. That's damning indictments of a coach not getting his players to play hard. At least for the Jags.
Since
the Tennessee game, they've been fighting. They've been playing hard. It's not good enough, right?
No,
that's
it's not
what
good
we just
enough.
2-11 is not good enough.
But you appreciate the effort.
But it's a sign that he hasn't lost the players' ability to show up, even though the playoffs are out of reach, and play hard on Sunday afternoon. The results aren't acceptable, but the effort is there, and I think that's what happened. Kroenke was embarrassed by the way they lost this weekend. It was just atrocious, and I think that was the final straw. They got Fisher pushed out.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, there's one guy that knows that answer, and boy, you go all the way back to when Shad Khan bought this football team You know, and there were some rumors flying around that Wayne might be interested in selling the team, but did we ever know? Well, all of a sudden, boom, right. It happens. So, I mean, Shad Khan is seems to be a very private and will make decisions and not be sharing that information with other people.
He said mid-season, actions speak louder than words, not much to say at this point in time.
So, let's not, be on the bandwagon. Boy, the Rams are doing it the right way and the Jaguars aren't doing it the right way because, the Rams made a change already, What's that going to do for the Rams?
Yeah, by the way, for the people who were suggesting Jim Harbaugh was a serious candidate for the Rams, Jim Harbaugh said, you're probably getting that from Urban Meyer. At least that's what he insinuated. He said, I'm not even considering it. Why would I? I'm not leaving Michigan. He went on to say, basically, I guarantee it's our opponents doing this to try to hurt our recruiting. But there's no way. He makes more money at Michigan than any head coach in the NFL does. He makes more than Belichick does.
What is he making at Michigan?
$9 million a year.
Good for him.
His dad's on the staff. His dad's got an office at University of Michigan. His kids are going to the same middle school that he went to there. His parents moved there to be,
and it's a legacy job.
It's his alma mater. He's winning. They love him. He's making all this money. One day, would he like to return to the National Football League? Perhaps. Not 2 years after taking that alma mater job, I don't think.
But there's no doubt. He's a good football coach. And I understand
obviously.
Why. His name's going to pop up at whether it be a big time college job, and there's not many that are more big time than Michigan. And then every time an NFL job opens up, his name is going to be bandied about. It's because he's that good of a coach. He's had success everywhere he's been. And he's highly respected, and that's just the way it is. And I think it's great that he kind of needles Urban Meyer, saying that maybe Ohio State was the one to put it out, just because that's what I love about Jim Harbaugh.
Right. He didn't mention him by name, but you knew who he was talking about.
What he's talking about. It's all good stuff. And then, hey, look, if you're the Rams and if you're a fan of the NFL, you'd love to see Jim Harbaugh with the Rams. To go back, to be able to have the ability to compete against Pete Carroll.
Sure.
And his ex-team, that would make for great drama.
No doubt.
Great drama.
All right, 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. Jeff Loggemans here, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Watch the Tape Wednesday. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars have 3 games remaining in the 2016 season. They'll go on the road to face the Texans on Sunday. Christmas Eve, the Titans will come to Everbank Field, and on January 1st, they'll face the Colts on the road. And yesterday, Malik Jackson joined the guys at Midday Chalk to talk about the last stretch.
These guys are going to come out here and play their hearts out for the last 3 games, and like I said, that's what Coach Sala talked, our linebacker coach talked to us about, is going out there and creating a standard. And as a team, we're going to continue to grow. And hopefully, we can get a nice winning streak going into the offseason and get this momentum going and get ready for next season.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
It's Tuesday somewhere. Actually, I think Aussie Jag is skipping Wednesday, right? He left yesterday at 5 o'clock. To fly home to Australia, and he'll get home Thursday morning. I think he'll miss a day somewhere.
Good to see him.
Yeah. It was good to see him.
That guy.
Nice guy.
Maybe the most dedicated listener we have. Because of the time change, he always reacts to whatever question of the day we have. He sets an alarm to get up at like 2, 3 in the morning so that he can read the question, answer it, then go back to bed and get ready for work, and then he listens to the podcast when he gets up in the morning.
Wow.
He's
That's
insane.
Nuts.
That's
great, man.
That is a little crazy, but that is dedication, man. Halfway around the world and back to see 2 Jag games. So we salute Aussie Jag and all the rest of the international contingent that made the trip, and all of you out there, by the way, who continue to make the trip, however short or long it is.
I hope he got to experience a couple of the restaurant recommendations that I gave him.
I think he experienced a lot, let's just say, in the last 2 weeks. It sounds like he had a good time with it. Let's get a few calls here going at 641-1010. We'll go next to Bernard on the north side. Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Doing well. What's up, man?
Good, man. Listen, a couple of comments, and then I got a question. First of all, I've been on real high and hoping that someone would start looking at Jim Harbaugh to see if we could steal him out of Michigan. In fact, I've even checked out his buyout for what they have on the internet, and it wasn't as high as I thought it would be. I know Shad could afford it. Second of all, if we don't get him, what about considering another winner that we had in Jacksonville, and that's Mike Smith? I think Mike Smith would be a pretty good coach. My only holdback is that I don't want necessarily another defensive coach right now because we do need some offense. And finally, with this comment, I mean, this thing that I read yesterday about Dave Caldwell being interested in interviewing Josh McDaniels. Is that some way of telling me that Chad has made up his mind and that he's going to keep Caldwell? Because, hey, you'd have missed on your number one franchise quarterback, so I just want to know. Enjoy your show as always, and give me your comments off the air.
All right, thank you, man. Let's start with the last one first, because we were just discussing that on the break. I assume he's referring to a couple of words in an article by Sam Farmer talking about the L.A. situation and the opening there. And what he wrote was that Jacksonville Jaguar general manager Dave Caldwell is believed to be interested in McDaniels, so the Rams being on the hunt for a coach could impact how the Jaguars deal with coach Gus Bradley, who is 14-47 in nearly four seasons. We're just saying, how is it going to impact it, right? You're not going to hire anybody in these next 3 weeks. Even if you were to say, okay, we want to get a jump on the field, you could talk to a guy like Mike Smith, right? Is Mike Smith or is he down with Dirk Cutter?
He's in Tampa.
He's back with Dirk Cutter. So you can't even do that now, right? I mean, you could talk to Tom Coughlin. There are a few people you could talk to, but you can't, you know, any coordinator, any thorough search that you want to do is not going to be able to be completed until after the season because those guys aren't going to be available to be interviewed. So is Sam Farmer trying to send a signal that Dave Caldwell, Sam Farmer from Los Angeles, trying to send a signal that Dave Caldwell is going to be back? I don't think Sam Farmer can know if Dave Caldwell is going to be back here as the GM.
I think first and foremost, look, we don't know what change is going to happen. There is change coming. We don't know what that's going to entail. So I think it's best to just wait and see what that change is going to be. With that being said, is it possible to talk to a Josh McDaniel, Mike
through
Smith,
the agent, or back channels?
I mean, that stuff's been going on for years. But it's not like you're going to get a jump start. I mean, it's just like free agency with the players. Communication was happening for years before the free agency window actually opened up. But once the window opens up and then literally the paper, the money hits the table, then that's when decisions are going to be made. So you can fire your coach. You can try to talk to agents right now. But the bottom line is that until things happen, conversations don't get real until the ability to close deals, that window is open. And so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we have no idea if Dave Caldwell is going to be back or not because we're not in Shad Khan's mind. He's ultimately the one. And whatever he's thinking now, he may meet with Dave the day after the season and go either way in a different direction, right? Dave may sway him, hey, you know what, here's why I should retain my job. Or maybe he says, you know what, I'm going to make a clean sweep. We just can't know. Now, as far as Mike Smith goes, forget Mike necessarily specifically, right? But just the concept of, do you follow a defensive coach with a defensive coach? Some people think, you know, you try to balance it out and go the other way. You go offense to defense, you go players coach to disciplinarian, things like that. Does that matter, or you just try to find the best guy?
I mean, it's an interesting question. And, you know, just to talk in generalities about any job, I think you always want to find, you know, a coach for any job. I mean, if it's the Rams job, you're trying to consider the same thing. You want to find a coach that gives you the best ability to win, whatever that may be. It may be defensive coach. It may be an offensive coach. And it may be a coach that can't even tell you what schemes they should run. But he's just great at managing people because the day-in, day-out stuff of game planning in the NFL, for the most part, is left up to the coordinator. So if he can surround himself with very talented people, then he has the ability to do maybe what he does best, which is manage people. If it's a coach that has great experience in offensive and defensive schemes, which many people believe that Bill Belichick is a guru at that, to where he is dabbling in all three phases of the game, and he has the ability to lead players and lead men, great. I mean, then that's your answer. There's no secret one formula that is going to solve anybody's answer. there's different formulas that work at different places. So there's going to be a wide cast net that can be thrown to look at a lot of different people.
If this job is open, how important is it that you get a head coach who's had prior head coaching experience in the NFL this time around, or is it? How high would that rank on your – it doesn't have to necessarily be a deal breaker, but would that be a something you'd really be seeking?
No. I mean, are you – do you – have to have experience? No. Would you like to have some experience? Yes. You know, I'm talking for any job. I mean, that's look, you want somebody who's been there, who's done that, who has experience, so when they come in, the learning curve is not as steep. And that gives you a leg up, you know, because many people perceive that this team has a roster that can win some games. And I think that that's another great question. You know, is this roster where people think it is? You know, and that. It's a great question. Is the answer yes? Is this roster ready to win? Maybe not. Is the answer that this roster is good but not great? Maybe. You know, I mean, that's one of the questions that I think with any team that's going to be making a change, I think that you have to take a good long look at is, are we where we need to be with the coach? Are we where we need to be with personnel? And are we where we need to be with the ability to make the right decisions going forward?
All right, let's get CJ on the south side before we break. CJ, you're on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Morning. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to throw something out there. I know it's a long shot. It's kind of exaggerated, but I was thinking of an idea, like, even get Josh McDaniels as a coach, and let's say have Tom Coughlin play the role like how John Elway does in Denver. I don't know if it's as GM or president or whatever, but even if it's at the expense of Dave Caldwell's job as GM, I'd rather have someone, a proven Super Bowl winner coach, make a personnel decision than the latter, you know. But
right,
that's just me.
You know, it's a great question. A lot of people say that, you know, Coughlin, and I know that he actually made a statement during the J Fund thing that was going on Tuesday a couple weeks back, where he said, you know, I would even be interested in running an organization. You know, there's not many coaches that have been able to make the switch from being a successful coach to being a successful, you know, at running a football team. And many would go back to Tom Coughlin's tenure here and say that he didn't have a good run as general manager here, and that, you know, he was the reason why that this team started to falter towards the end.
He wasn't a good manager of the salary cap
and
at the end.
Well, I mean,
he missed on some picks. I mean, everybody
missed
on
some picks, you know. But that, I mean, that happens in the draft. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a great question. And
here's the thing:
Coughlin, when he was with the Giants, I mean, won two Super Bowls, and Jerry Reese was running the ship,
right,
as the general manager and the personnel guy. So, you know, if you were interested in a Tom Coughlin for any job, do you want to put him into a position to where his skill level is not proven, or do you want him at a position where his skill level has been proven?
I know the answer for me. I want him. What's he going in the Hall of Fame for?
It's not
for being a front office guy, right? And not that he couldn't do the job. The only issue I have with wish lists like this, it's fine to have a wish list, but in this scenario, if you're going to hire a guy, Tom Coughlin or anyone else, to be your head of football operations and put him in an Elway-esque power role, he's going to choose the coach, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to say, we're going to hire this coach and we're going to bring in Coughlin. No. If you're going to hire that guy, you're going to say, you tell me who the coach is. You know, that's how that's going to work. So it's going to be up to whether it's Dave Caldwell making that call, whether it's someone else in that role making that call. You're not going to hire the coach and then hire a guy and say, okay, now you're in this role, but you don't get to hire the coach. That's not usually how it works in the NFL. Rarely is a coach hired before a GM, and when that, or, you know, front office guy is supposed to be in charge, and when that guy gets hired, all automatically he comes in with his power kind of neutralized somewhat because he doesn't have the authority. It's not his
guy. The first
guy.
Hire is going to have the ability, you know, in any situation in the NFL, the first hire typically is the one to where, even if he is hired as the coach, then he is the guy
that has
the power.
He's in charge. He's the decision maker, bottom line, right? The other guy handles the day-to-day stuff, but the guy who hired you, you said it right. The guy who gets hired first has that ultimate decision-making power. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. This is Dayton Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. More with Jeff Loggeman, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, I guess when it comes to defrauding the government, you go big or you go home. $2 billion. Why not $2 million? Well, because it's not enough.
You wind
billion.
Up in one of those like Club Med prisons?
Probably.
Something like that,
yeah,
where you're playing tennis?
For like a year, you pay a big fine, and hopefully you buried some of the cash in your backyard, and you go on with your life. This is this date in football. We go back December 14th, 1941. The first NFL divisional playoff game was played on this date. In that game, the Bears beat the Packers 33-14. This date in 1947, the Cleveland Browns beat the New York Yankees 14-3 in an All-American Football Conference championship game. The Browns were winning a bunch of titles back in the day before they entered the National Football League. 1969, San Diego wide receiver Lance Allworth set a professional record at the time with a pass reception in his 96th consecutive game. This date in 1984, Howard Cosell announced his retirement from Monday Night Football. He had had enough. 1991, the 57th Heisman Trophy was awarded. Former Jaguar Desmond Howard, a member of the inaugural team here in Jacksonville, won that one for the University of Michigan. And also on this date in 1996, Danny Werfel, the Florida Gators, won the 62nd Heisman Trophy. Famous birthdays for this date, Georgia Bulldog alum. As far as I can tell, Charlie Trippi is still alive. 94 years old, if he is, going strong, we hope. A halfback, quarterback, defensive back, he was listed as for the Chicago Cardinals. First overall pick in the 1945 NFL draft, a Hall of Fame inductee in 1968, and a member of the all-1940s NFL team. Also on this date, in 1939, Ernie Davis was born. Ernie Davis, first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy, did it in 1961 for Syracuse. And was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame posthumously in 1969. Davis played college football, as we said, for Syracuse, was drafted by the Redskins in December of 1961, then almost immediately traded to the Browns, given number 45, then diagnosed with leukemia the following summer. He passed away in 1963 at the age of 23 without having ever played in a pro game. He was, of course, the subject of the 2008 Universal Pictures film The Express, based on the nonfiction book Ernie Davis, The Elmira Express by Robert C. Gallagher.
Didn't Coughlin play in the backfield with him?
I think he has talked about that before. You're probably right about that.
What year was that?
1960. I think he was there 59, 60, 61, Ernie Davis was. So if Coughlin was playing at Syracuse in that window, I would say yes. But you got Tom Coughlin.
I don't think so. According to this, I'm looking at Coughlin's Wikipedia page, and it says in 67 he set the school's single-season pass receiving record. So
then no.
A little bit after.
But in that kind of time frame. Anyway, that was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
All right, first let's hear a little bit of sound for this today's Honda Drive around the NFL. Getting ready for Thursday Night Football tomorrow in Seattle as Richard Sherman doesn't think much about the slate of games they've had on TNF.
Poop fest. That's terrible. This is we played, freaking got home like 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that on Monday, and then you got to play again. I mean, congratulations, NFL. You did it again. But they've been doing it all season, so I guess we're the last ones to get the middle finger. I mean, it's pretty high, but top five. Because it's just no regard. You know, it's hypocritical, as I've stated before. You know, they make this huge stance about player safety. Then you put the players in tremendous danger.
Would they ever consider, from a scheduling perspective, trying to give teams the week before? Like, make sure the team playing on Thursday night had the week before off, and then that way you got the 10 days before your next game anyway.
Yeah, well, the problem is that you would have to stretch, you know, bye weeks out throughout the season. You can't do that. You know, so, I mean, somebody has to be able to do it to where they're playing on a Thursday, and it's going to be a short week.
And teams play more than one Thursday night game, usually throughout the season.
I get the players' concern. I mean, I just remember, you know, the older you get, you know, your typical week is that Monday you feel like you've been in a train wreck. Tuesday you feel like you've been in two train wrecks. And then Wednesday you start to feel a little bit better. Thursday you start to feel semi-normal, and then Friday, Saturday, you're starting to get better. I mean, so it's hard. All of a sudden, you're playing a game on the one day you're actually starting to feel, you know, functional.
Right.
Not game ready, but just functional. That's very difficult to do. Maybe it would be nice if you had the bye week and then Thursday game after that, but you just can't do it from a scheduling standpoint. It doesn't work.
We all probably knew it was coming as soon as the Cowboys lost another game, and sure enough, they lose 2 out of 13 games that Dak Prescott has started, and the calls for Tony Romo to be the starting quarterback have begun from
That's
the fan
ridiculous.
Base. Jerry Jones was asked, what is the definitive situation that would call on Romo to come back in?
Jerry, in your mind, what is a definitive situation that would call on Tony to come back in?
I don't have a definition for it, but you'll know it when you see it.
So the assumption on that would...
It's kind of like a definition I heard one time of another issue, trying to define a negative topic, and they said, I don't know how to say it, but it's just something that when you see it, you know it's there.
Why is pornography negative?
I don't know.
Huh?
I don't know.
Come on, Jerry. That's what the famous quote about pornography.
Here's the question. Why is he even commenting on the quarterback situation?
Because he's Jerry Jones.
He's won 11 out of 13 games with Dak Prescott as your quarterback. So, I mean, if you're going to comment on it, it makes it a topic to where now it's getting thrown around every talk show, including ours, and every national publication around the world. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that – you shouldn't even comment on that. Dak Prescott is our quarterback, and until further notice, that's the way it's going to be, and then leave it at that.
Yeah, I would too if I were him, but that's not Jerry's style. That's just not who he is. He does the weekly radio hit. He's got to talk about something controversial, I suppose. According to USA Today's Tom Pelissero, NFL teams were informed yesterday that the salary cap is supposed to rise from $155 million this season to somewhere between $166 and $170 for next year. The Jaguars, who had the third most cap space in the league, already had $40 million in cap space, so that number could be as high as $55 million when the cap figure is finally decided. The Browns have $47 million, 49ers $43 million are the only two teams with more cap space than the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Los Angeles Rams job opened up on Monday. The names for potential candidates immediately started flying around to be the next head coach in the market that the NFL coveted and assumes apparently that everyone else does as well. A name at the top of that list was Jim Harbaugh, who's been coaching his alma mater, Michigan, for the last 2 years and had them about 6 inches away from a potential college football playoff berth in their game against Ohio State. Predictably, Harbaugh, who is getting $9 million a year from Michigan, was asked about it and said, quote, I'm not leaving Michigan, not even considering it. A lot of this talk is coming from our enemies, from coaches. You know the names. You probably know the names of the top three I'm referring to. They say they like to say that to the media. They like to tell that to recruits, to their families, trying to manipulate them into some other schools besides Michigan. We know them as jive turkeys. Say it like it is. That's the way it is. Pete Carroll, another name being thrown around for the Los Angeles job, and Sean Payton are the highest paid NFL coaches, making $8 million apiece this year, $1 million less than Harbaugh at Michigan.
Pete Carroll thinks it's 1970, or Jim Harbaugh thinks it's 1977.
Jive turkeys
on the loose in college football right now. By the way, that was the definition of obscenity that Potter Stewart on the Supreme Court said back in the 1980s. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. So there you have it.
Classic line.
Yes. Apparently, quarterback change is akin to obscenity. I don't know. So you have no doubt you'd stick with Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, when's the last time Tony Romo played a meaningful game?
A long time.
Long time ago. You know, so, and a couple weeks ago, I remember Dak Prescott was kind of struggling in the first half of a ball game, and all of a sudden, the second half, he came out, and he was fantastic. I mean, he really kind of showed that capable of winning football games. And, you know, Dak Prescott deserves to keep it, and just because you have one game to where things don't go well and you lost the second game of the year to the same football team doesn't mean that he should even be even brought up in a conversation about being replaced. I mean, that's crazy.
All right. Got this one on the text line for you, Jeff. This will make your holiday season bright and cheery. All right. We don't get many of these for Jeff. Tony and I are used to these, so this will be fun for us. Let's see. It started out, Jeff graduated from the University of Virginia with a PhD in duh. He makes more duh comments than anybody in radio. Hasn't answered a question straight up yet. Why is he even there? Can't stand that guy. Thanks. My name is Luis. If you guys want me to call in and tell myself I can, don't want you to think I'm just texting and running, LOL. Yeah, you got a PhD in it.
I got
apparently.
A PhD in duh.
So there you have it.
Luis, I'm sorry you didn't get into Virginia and you had to settle for Virginia Tech.
Oh, sorry. Man.
I'm really sorry.
That is rough right there. So we don't duck to, you know what, the good and the bad, they come in. And you just roll with them as they come. All right, 641-1010. We'll come back and take more of your calls. If you want to check in on the text line, whether it's just giving us a good ripping, you're welcome to do that, or actually asking a question for Jeff Loggeman on a Watch the Tape Wednesday. Wednesday's brought to you by Metro Rooter. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jeff Loggeman lays down the law. Jeff Loggeman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Loggeman.
All right, here we go. Continuing along, a Watch the Tape Wednesday is what we'll call it today. Check the Tape Tuesday got pushed back a day. Loggy is back in the house with us here. A Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're along with us. If you've got plumbing issues, don't have those issues. Just call our friends at Metro Rooter. They'll take great care of you at 695-1911. Whether it's in your home, residential plumbing, commercial plumbing, industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter has a solution. Same-day service, weekends included, so you're not waiting. The right people with the right equipment, that's a simple formula, but it's kept Metro Rooter serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area very well since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com for more information about all of their services or call 695-1911 for our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today, Metro Rooter. 641-1010 is our phone number to get on board here. You know, Tony mentioned during the Honda driver on the NFL salary cap going up significantly next year. What is it, 10 to 15 million?
That's what they're estimating, yeah.
Jags already were in great cap shape as it was. You do have to spend a certain percentage of the cap as cash. It's not, it's without getting too complicated, it's like, let's say the salary cap for easy math purposes is $150 million. You have to spend on average over a rolling period of time. Over 90% of that, I believe, is the figure.
I think it's like 89.
All right, so 89, yeah. 90%. But that's in cash. In other words, if you sign a guy and give him a $20 million signing bonus, that counts towards that figure. Mm-hmm. It's the actual cash money that you spend in that year. So regardless, the Jags are in fine cap shape. They're going to be even better cap shape when the number goes up. Does that, in your opinion, change their thinking on any players that we've talked about, guys like Julius Thomas making a lot of money that doesn't match up with the level of production for whatever reasons, whether it's Jared Odrick or anybody else? Does it make it more likely that some of these guys may be around because you've got more money to play with?
No, I don't. I think the reason why is that you want to make the best decisions for your football team, and I think that Julius, for whatever reason, hasn't been a fit. You wonder with the commentary that happened earlier in the year where, you know, about the quarterback, you know, was at him, you know, and he's clearly fallen out of favor with this coaching staff and Jared Odrick. You know, I don't know if he's ever been a true fit. I always thought that he should have been a three technique when they brought him in, but they played him at that strong B. But no, and here's the other thing. Look, here's the best part. I mean, if you've got that kind of cap room, you get to be another player in free agency. And the problem, though, in free agency this year is going to be is that with the cap going up that amount, it means that teams that might have been in cap trouble now have the ability to not lose players right that they might have. So, you know, look, it's fine and dandy to have all that money to spend, but the situation that you want to be in is to where you're having a hard time keeping players because you're up against the cap because the quality of your players across your roster are really good, and you want to keep them. So, you know, and there's some guys that you're going to have to make decisions on going forward, and you'd like to lock them up to where that's not an issue. Would you like to go ahead and not expose yourself or put at risk a lot of money that's going to be guaranteed to where it doesn't become a risk factor in the future? But, you know, this team, you need to get to the point to where you have cap problems. And I'm not saying cap problems are going to be there without winning, because typically cap problems are associated with winning.
Right. I understand. Look, the ideal situation is, like Seattle had, you find a quarterback that you can have under a rookie contract for about 3 years who plays near the top of the league, and you can spend a lot of money on a lot of other positions.
Well, and they were justified in spending that money at other positions. You know, with the Jaguars, you know, let's say you Blake Bortles, he's still on his rookie cap, and you're looking at going forward. Let's say Blake is a rookie right now. Where do you see the money being spent with this roster going ahead? Allen Robinson, obviously.
Sure, Marquise Lee now.
Linder.
Yeah.
Marquise Lee.
Telvin.
You know, so, I mean, so you got some guys that you like to lock up. I mean, Brandon Linder and Telvin Smith, I mean, those are two guys that, without a doubt, you don't even want to get them to the point where they're sniffing free agency. Not even close.
Don't think they will. This goes back to earlier you talking about Allen Robinson. You didn't like the body language, you know, where he kind of threw up his hands to indicate the ball, where he wanted the ball. Somebody responded on the text line. I didn't see it at the time. Driven by Duval Ford. So is it okay for the quarterback to show bad body language but not the wide receiver?
Well, I think what they're talking about there is the body language overall of Blake Bortles.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I think with Allen Robinson, it was a different body language. It was kind of directed at the quarterback. You know, and I don't think that you see Blake Bortles' body language being directed at somebody in particular when he's looking at somebody. You know, so I think it's a little different because, you know, what they're talking about is when Blake misses, you know, he's throwing his head up and he's throwing his arms around and he's looking. Body language a lot of times can be misinterpreted, but the one I think that can't be misinterpreted when it's directed at somebody and it's directed at a teammate. I think there's a different kind.
All right, a couple more here. This one coming in on Twitter from at Belford93. Robert says, listening on radio, please ask Jeff his thoughts on the Jags playing a 3-4 defense going forward. Seems to him that it would be a better fit.
Well, I think that they can do either one. You know, I think that they've got talent at linebacker. I think they've got some big guys up front that could play. You know, the 4B is essentially a 3-4 defensive end anyway. Malik Jackson played in a 3-4. I mean, he's a natural fit. Roy Miller, Avery Jones could play zero or one techniques in a 3-4. You know, there's not that much difference between a 3-4 team in the National Football League and a 4-3. There's not. What people kind of get caught up in is that the 3-4 of the old era was that the ends and the nose tackle played head up. Nobody plays head up anymore in a 3-4. They're always playing shaded techniques. So there's really very little difference between the two defenses anymore in the National Football League. There's really not. I think the big difference is that you have the ability to have guys stand up and the linebackers have the ability to cover in space and pass rush. And I think that they have that. With Dante Fowler and Unique Ngakoue, I think both those guys can play in space. So, no, I don't think it would be an issue to play 3-4.
Were you surprised at how little Miles Jack played this week? It snaps about half of Scuda's.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't really agree with that because, you know, Dan Scuda, we talked about him in punt protection having the elbow questionable coming in, but yet he's playing a lot of snaps. I thought that Miles Jack should play more. And, you know, that's going to be interesting to see because, you know, a lot of people say, well, if you go to a 3-4, then that can get Miles Jack on the field. Where?
You've talked about this, right?
You know, it doesn't really change the ability, you know, Miles Jack at some point to be – and the most comfortable position that he would play would be the weak side linebacker or will position or the Mike. Well, Telvin's the will or the weak side backer. Paul Posluszny is the Mike. And both of those guys are playing very well. So I don't see where, you know, he would fit better in a 3-4 versus a 4-3, but I think that getting him on the field gives them a lot of flexibility to do some things coverage-wise. You know, early in that game last week, the way he covered the tight end down the field, I thought was a perfect example of what he gives you flexibility-wise as a linebacker. He can cover backs. He can cover tight ends. And that's a good thing. And Dan Scuda, that's not his forte. And I thought Miles Jack should have played more.
Posluszny under contract for one more year at basically what he's making now.
Yeah, which is you're going to keep him.
Definitely keep him.
Absolutely.
Posluszny knows.
He's playing very well.
I know. I agree that
really
he is.
Well.
But I think for some people that are like, you know, you got this commodity in Miles Jack, young guy, you want to get him on the field. So you, what is the best way to get him more reps? Forget the auto, right? Whether it's in a 4-3 or a 3-4, play him as a standard strong side linebacker. I mean, because you're going to, like you said, Telvin's going to be here. You're likely, whoever making this decision brings back Posluszny. So there's two guys that have got to be on the field a lot. So what's the best way to get Jack more involved?
Well, I think number one is that you want him to be better on special teams, but you're talking specifically about
defense. I'm talking about
defense.
Yeah, right.
And so the only way that you can get him on the field more is to continue to have him play the Sam linebacker position or Otto. It's just different
right.
names. It's
sure.
really not a difference. And to have him play more snaps at that. The problem is that the majority of your snaps in the league, over 50%, are your nickel dime type packages, so you don't have three linebackers on the field. I think, though, that going forward, you need to start getting Miles Jack more snaps at the Mike position in the nickel package and starting to roll him in when it warrants it, when he earns that right. And I think that, look, Paul is, at some point you're going to start to see Paul start to, you know, show his age a little bit. And so when that happens, then you've got Miles Jack ready to step right in and never miss a beat. But I don't think that until Paul shows that he's slowing down or Telvin is not playing well, I don't see Miles Jack taking snaps away from either one of those two guys.
I got one more here before we break. This one from Josh at B-Town, two Jacks on Twitter. He said, Telvin and Malik are defensive leaders. Does the offense need a vocal rally together kind of guy? Could Lee be that guy? Do vocal leaders even matter? Do they motivate players? How important is having that? You know, obviously on offense, you got to look. I heard Malik Jackson talking about this yesterday. They asked him about this on Midday Chalk, and he says that Blake is the leader on the offense. But oftentimes, you know, I think what they see sometimes, or I'm interpreting what fans is having the feedback that we do on this show, like Tom Brady, you see on the sidelines sometimes, get his guys together and da 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 da. You don't see that as much with Blake.
No, you see him talking with Chad Henne and Nathaniel Hackett on the sidelines.
Right.
You know, but that's a progression. I mean, a quarterback doesn't all of a sudden in year three, all of a sudden he's on the sideline, he's coaching guys up. It takes time to get to that point, and it's taken Tom Brady some time to get to that point. And Blake, look, when you're the quarterback, you're going to be a leader. It's just the way it is. I mean, that position, that's what you are. And he wears the C on his chest. But the most important thing that you have to have to show leadership and have the ability to lead is performance. The better your performance is, the more ability you have to lead, the more ability you have to be able to talk to other guys. Because you know what? If Blake's not playing well and he's trying to coach up, lead, you know, motivate other guys on the field, you know, if he's playing like crap, what's the player going to say to Blake? He's going to say, why don't you worry about you? You know, so leadership, you have to have performance before you have leadership. And so Blake needs to worry about the performance thing right now. The leadership will come when the performance happens.
All right, let's take a timeout here. We will come back, talk with Dr. Stephen Lucy here from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. Get the weekly look at the injury report. More with Jeff Logman as well on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Logs here with you live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5. FM. Folks, the holidays are just about upon us, and gift-giving season is here. Harrys.com has some great solutions for guys out there, whether it's your dad, whether it's your brother, whether it's any man in your life, and ladies out there, for the particular man in your life. Harrys.com has the shaving experience that guys have been waiting for, because you get the highest quality razors you're going to find anywhere. You're going to pay about half the price of what you pay for the top name brands and big box stores. This holiday, Harrys is ready to gift shave sets at all different price points, beginning at just $15. They all come with a razor handle of your choice, shaving cream, replacement blades, and a travel cover. Their Winston set includes an engravable chrome handle if you want to add a personalized touch. And as a special offer for listeners of this show, we partner with Harrys to give you $5 off your order by entering code Dempsey at checkout. Free shipping will end Friday, so act now. Go to Harrys.com, get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. Don't forget to enter code Dempsey at checkout for $5 off. That's Harrys.com, promo code Dempsey. Harrys.com, start shaving better today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
There's multiple players that you can point to on the Jaguars' defensive side of the ball that could be considered captains and leaders of the defense. But who is that guy on the offense? Yesterday, Malik Jackson joined the guys of Midday Chalk.
I mean, Blake is that guy. I mean, it's one of those things that people don't think or from his play this year, whether you want to look at it or say it, he is the offensive leader. I mean, the quarterback always is. And it's one of those things that, you know I had a sophomore slump, and he had a damn good sophomore year. So it's one of those things I think he's going to learn from this and grow. And, you know, I believe the Jags are going to stay behind him and keep growing with him. So, you know, we have no way but up to go. So I think, you know, I think that's where we're going.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
The Bud Light Party continues all season long with great giveaways to Jaguars games, tickets to the Bud Light Party Zone,
and even the Terrace Suite.
The place to win them all is right here on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Raise one to right now.
Jeff Lagerman lays down the law. Jeff Lagerman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Lagerman. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right, time for a look at the weekly injury report as we turn our attention to the folks at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Stephen Lucy joins us, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. What's up, Dr. Lucy? How are you?
I'm great.
How are the players on this football team? How great are they, particularly some of these hamstring guys? We got a couple of guys that went on IR with Julius Thomas and Jared Odrick, done for the season. Hoping to have some of these other guys available to the Jaguars this weekend against Houston. Let's start with Chris Ivory. Where's he at right now?
You know, he's coming along. From what I understand, he's going to be a day-to-day this week. I think he's going to try to go, and then it's just a matter of whether he can make the cuts and do the explosive stuff that a running back needs to do.
When you typically see a running back get activated off of a hamstring injury, do you try to wait until he can do everything? Or do you, you know, if you say, well, we think he can handle 5 to 10 reps, you know what I mean? Like, is there a range where you say, well, if we don't use him too much, we can get some effective play out of him?
You know, there's a lot that goes into it, what you're alluding to. And part of it is where you are in the season, because the biggest problem with a hamstring is a re-injury. And you're never 100% confident when you let them go. So you want them to demonstrate to you that they can make all the cuts and the explosiveness that's necessary. You're going to worry about re-injury. And, yes, you are going to try to limit it somewhat, because then you get into a fatigue re-pull issue. But you're absolutely right. But this time of year, you know, if he did re-injure it, it's not nearly as severe as if you're talking about a training camp injury at the start of the season.
All right, Allen Hurns, pretty significant hamstring. Looks like he's trending towards missing another week.
Yeah, I think his must have been a little worse than Chris Ivory's, from what I understand, and so he's coming a little slower from that. I'm not looking for him to make it this week, but I wouldn't be shocked if he did. But I think we got a better chance on Chris Ivory.
Definitely don't want to be without your best offensive lineman. They were last week with Brandon Linder missing with the ankle. What is the expectation for his return?
You know, he's a little like Chris. I think he's going to give it a go in practice here today, tomorrow, and he may end up being a game day decision on what he can what he feels comfortable with. And I don't think he got to a stage where he felt comfortable playing last week, and it'll be a similar decision this week.
And a lot of tackles for Jonathan Cyprien last week. He came out of the game with a banged up shoulder. How banged up are we talking here?
Well, you know, we don't know just yet. I'm sure they're still working it up. I'm sure he'll be limited some this week, and then he's going to be another one of these guys toward the end of the week in game day time to see whether he feels good about going and whether he can, you know, take a hit and deliver a hit.
Anybody else we're forgetting?
There may be, but it did seem like at least this week we came out of it with a lot less injuries than the last 2 weeks, because mostly what we're talking about here, other than Jonathan Cyprien, is mostly some old injuries from those 2 weeks where we really did get hurt in injuries. And this past game was a little less severe.
All right, so let's hope that nothing further happens. Jags hold it together. Because what you don't want is a bunch of guys starting their off season having to rehab injuries from this year. You like to start with a more of a clean slate if you could have it, but it doesn't seem to be the case, at least for some of these guys. Dr. Stephen Lucy with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. We check in on the injury report with him every Wednesday. Thank you, Doc.
Yeah, good to be back. Good to see Jeff Lagerman.
How about that?
You know,
come in on Tuesdays and you can see him all the
time.
You know,
I've watched Dr. Steve work now.
Like, you've been, when you've been under the knife?
Yes, Steve did a scope on my knee. I want to say that was, what was that, winter of 97?
Yep.
And I had a real bad reaction to general anesthesia on the previous operation. So I had asked him, I said, you know, is there a way that I don't have to have general anesthesia to do this knee thing? And so they gave me, what is it called? Just like
local.
An epidural? Local, whatever?
No, we numb up the knee and then give a little of the Michael Jackson juice to keep you slightly sedated during the procedure. And we started doing that back then. We're still doing it. And then people bounce right up. They are ready to go. We won't let them drive home, but they feel good enough to. So it's a nice way to do a knee arthroscopy.
Yeah, I got to watch the whole thing on television. I mean, literally, he's sitting there with the chisel and the hammer and, you know, trimming it up and all
that
kind of
stuff. I'm more interested in why it's called the Michael Jackson juice, and should I know that this is called the – what are we talking about
here?
Well,
that's – we use a lot of that. It used to be sodium pentothal, and now it's propofol, and that's where Michael got in trouble having his doctor – giving that IV so he could get to sleep. And I think the doctor might have gone out and taken a phone call or something while he was sleeping, and he didn't do so well. So that's the deal.
Sodium pentothal, I think we used to hear that on MASH all the time back in the day. If you ever watched
MASH.
MASH. There was using it back in the Korean War era and the like. All right, Dr. Lucy, right. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Right. You bet.
There he goes. Jeff, you were just talking about, you know, one of the reasons, you know, there are always several reasons when you get a guy towards the end, maybe he's going to be able to be back for week 17. Is it really worth it to keep him on the roster? But
there's other reasons.
One of the ones you pointed out was you put a guy on IR now, right, because the season's a lost season. You can go out and claim another player, put him on your roster, and you've got him under your control then heading into the offseason.
Right, and, you know, you're 2-11. First of all, you want to be very conservative when it comes to playing really good football players like Brandon Linder, like an Allen Hurns, you know, and like Jared Odrick and Julius Thomas going to IR. You know, the question is, you know, are they in your future? And then by opening up a roster spot, you can essentially raid another team's practice squad by giving that player a regular paycheck. And when you go into the offseason, he's on your roster. So that's the one thing about teams that are really good going into the playoffs that they're always very concerned about is the teams that aren't good taking guys, putting them on IR, and then having their players stolen off of their practice squad. And that's just the way it is, though. That's the cost of being successful.
Here's a quick one on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Can we talk about if Blake Bortles ever checks in and out of plays at the line? All I ever see him do is call out the mic. Every other quarterback in the league does more pre-snap. Your reaction to that?
Well, I think he's got flexibility, and I think he's changed plays at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's got the ability to do that. Does he have that ability as much as Tom Brady, you know, or Aaron Rodgers or other quarterbacks that are, you know, have much more experience in the league? No. And much more experience in that offensive system? No. I mean, that's just it's a progression of a quarterback, you know, through time. You know, the more comfortable, the more experience they get in an offensive system, the more flexibility he's going to have at the line of scrimmage. And with Blake Bortles, I think that when they changed offensive coordinators and the mistakes that he was making, they wanted to minimize the clutter that he was going through in his brain at the line of scrimmage. So they probably simplified it. And have they maybe taken away some of that, or is it less than a lot of other quarterbacks? Sure, just because he hasn't been playing at a high level.
All right, give us the 60-second preview. If the Jags are going to win against the Houston Texans, what's the script they need to follow?
Better stop the run. I mean, the Texans ran for over 180 yards the last time when they won. That's the way they play the game. They have a quarterback who is not very good in Brock Osweiler. They want to run the football, and they want to play good defense. So you need to negate what they do well, which they – if you're going to negate it, you got to stop their running game, put a lot of pressure on Brock Osweiler, force him into some bad decisions, and get some takeaways, which hasn't happened a lot. You know, defensively, you got to negate their players that are the best, and that's Clowney, Whitney Merciless, and McKinney, the inside linebacker. You've got to be able to negate them, and it's not going to be an easy task. Very talented in the back end, so – should be a good football game. Once again, it's not going to be a high-scoring football game, and this football team is going to have an opportunity to win. It's a division game and an opportunity to give them their first division loss.
Let's end on a high note here. This one, we had somebody critiquing you earlier on the text line. Here's one for Tony.
Yeah,
I'm having a good day.
The Hokie?
I'm having a good day. No, that right. The Hokie came after you. Here's one for Tony, similarly college football related. Tyler was checking the 1010XL Facebook page, and the most recent review of the station came from December 10th. And it said, since Tony Smith called the Vols fan base the big orange virus, I cannot let that jab slide. Your face looks like something out of a 1970s porno. Good day. Good day to you, Tony. How do you feel about that?
There's still the big orange virus.
All right. And I think both sides are accurate in that one right there. All right, that just about does it for us, Logs. Back to normal Tuesday next week. Tonight, what do you got? Tonight, you got a bunch of stuff coming up the next few days.
Wednesday it is. Tonight have Jaguars Live on Channel 4, 8 o'clock. And we're actually going to have the guy to talk about Daly's Place, which will be an interesting conversation about where that's at in the construction process. And then Thursday, the Gus Bradley Show at 6, 7 o'clock is Jaguars Thursday. I believe Baselli will be in-house for that. And then Saturday morning, outdoor show, Christmas show extravaganza down at Ring Power.
Nice. Somebody also on the text line said today, it's amazing that someone who knows so much about one subject, being the outdoors, also knows so much about football. So,
well, and I'm also a,
they're not all Hokie also, fans on the text
well,
line.
Well, I also know about one other thing. And remember, I am the PhD in duh.
Duh. That's right. Every time he opens his mouth, he's got a PhD in duh.
That covers everything else.
Right. Pretty much. You got outdoors, football outdoors. Duh. All right. That does it for us. Thanks to Metro Rooter Hour Wednesday sponsor. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, and for Jeff Loggeman, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up here live at Everbank. Midday Chalk is coming up next year on 1010XL, so stick around for that. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. I'm always talking about what a great deal they are for lunch, but breakfast as well, the new breakfast sliders. If you haven't tried one, well, why don't you try two? You get a two-pack for only $3, two thick sausage patties, each with a slice of tasty melted cheddar cheese on a fresh-baked bun they call a baby brioche. It's the perfect size for eating on the go. Like I mentioned, $3, you're not going to find a better price for food on the go anywhere. You're thinking, why did I do that today? Well, you know what? Tomorrow's a new day. Start your day off right by popping into your local Circle K or Kangaroo Express and head right to the Fresh Case. And it doesn't have to be breakfast. They've got the new light lunchtime wraps. They've got all the classic Dandy and Anytime Deli sandwiches and subs, the classic Cuban, the three meat trio, tuna salad, you name it, anything you can imagine, they've probably got a variety, something near and dear to your heart. Always fresh, always delicious, and always at a price that puts a smile on your face. It's a winning formula for over six decades. Folks, when you're hungry for food on the go, go out and do what I do and make yours a Dandy today.
You guys have a good day. Peace.